Boy, you turned to writing in 2009 and published his first book, Appalachian Ghost Stories, Tales from Bloody Breathitt, in 2011. The following year, he began production of this documentary, The Feuds of Bloody Breathitt, Kentucky's Untold Story. And he's currently working on his second book, a memoir of his days growing up in Jackson. He currently resides in Franklin County. Now, we really appreciate Jerry being here. Copies of his book and this documentary will be available in the dining room immediately after this series. So, Jerry, it's great to have you back here again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Well, I really appreciate the Filson Club having me back. This is obviously Kentucky's premier historical society. Just a wonderful, incredible facility, and I'm very honored to have been asked to come here twice to show my film. In 1986, I was on break one day in the Capitol building, the state Capitol building, and I went down to the law library, and I was just kind of milling around, and they had some beautiful old books in there, and one of them caught my eye. It's a little blue book about like this, and I looked at it closer, and I believe it was in the land of Breathitt. So I asked the folks at the desk if I could see that book for a few minutes, and they got it out from behind the glass and handed it to me, and I sat down and started reading through it. And about halfway through it, I ran across a fella's name that looked really familiar. It was Bob Deaton. And right after Bob's name, it said that he had killed somebody. Well, that was my Grandpa Bob that I later found out. And Grandpa Bob had been a minister, and among other things, just a, you know, upstanding citizen. And so I'd never heard that. So I went home that night, and I called Dad, and I said, "Dad, did Grandpa Bob kill somebody?" And he said, "Well, yeah, we always heard he did." So, and yet my family had never talked about that. So I was stunned to find that out all these years later. He died in 1939, but he had apparently been up to his neck in all the stuff that went on Longs Creek and in Breathitt County. And in later research, I would find Grandpa Bob's name again in places that he just should not have been. But it was fascinating. I grew up in Breathitt County. Our backyard, we had a cabin. Still, you're going to see it on this film. And in this cabin, one of the first people who died, one of the first feudists killed, John Amos, was killed there in 1870. His picture hung in the cabin. It's still right there today. And so my entire life, I grew up hearing about these incredible feuds. So in 86, that really stoked the fire, but it was all these years later, and I guess until I retired from lobbying, I could not have possibly made a film or written a book. So all these years later, I decided for three reasons that this film needed to be made. First of all, it needed to be made to tell the story. It's an incredible story. Everybody's heard about the Hatfields and the McCoys. The least feud of all the feuds in Kentucky, the Breathitt County feud, is gigantic compared to it, and yet nobody knows about it. Most people have heard of Bloody Breathitt, but they really don't know why that is anymore. So it needed to be preserved. The second one, I wanted to tell my family story. I knew that probably wouldn't be told, so I wanted to include that. And like I said, the more I dug, the more I found out. So I really wanted that to be in there. And the third reason, and maybe the most compelling reason, was I wanted somebody to make this film that would not go into eastern Kentucky and come out just having scorched the people of the mountains with stereotypes. And I knew if somebody else did it that was not from there, that we'd walk out and we'd be looking at the most desperately poor family that you could find anywhere. Ignorance would be spewing from every corner. And folks, that's just not the way it is. You know, in Franklin County, where I live, we can find that same element in downtown Frankfort or out on Stockton Road or someplace like that. But I wanted to make sure that I portrayed eastern Kentucky and not betrayed eastern Kentucky. And I think I've done that. The folks back there seem to really enjoy it. And I'm proud of it. KET took it and has been showing it since January, which I can't believe on my very first project. And I'm not a filmmaker by trade at all. You know, it's just something I decided I wanted to do and that needed to be done. So we're going to get started here at the very end. When my aunt starts singing that song, hold your applause until she's finished, if you would. I want you to hear this song that it's about one of the feuds, one of the feudists, and she just did a wonderful job singing it. So with no further ado, let's go ahead and get started.
The feuds of Breathitt County are the best untold stories left in Kentucky. The feuds have been over for 100 years now, and still nobody's told their story. Now, I didn't realize I was going to be the one to tell that story.
It took me 4 months from beginning to end, and I've talked to other movie producers, and they told me they cannot believe that I actually did it. But when I realized that I had that May 4th date coming up on me, I had to act quickly. And then I knew if I was going to get it done in time to sell any of it and make my money back, I had to have it done by Labor Day weekend. So I had a really tight schedule to work with. So I had to learn everything about as quickly as you could imagine on how to make a film. So I'd been doing the research several years in advance and had read enough. My goal was to read enough so that when I interviewed somebody, if they said something really wild, I'd know about it, and I wouldn't put it in the film, therefore. But most of the people that I interviewed, even Daniel Bryant, he was just close enough on everything that I could still use him. So, but it was a lot of fun doing it, very interesting. The fellow, Mr. Strong, I was sitting there on his porch, and it occurred to me that my great-great-great-uncle had killed his great-grandfather. And like my aunt said, I kind of wondered occasionally if I would run into any problems. But Sam Strong was just as I said, he's just as gentle a fella as you could ever imagine. And he came from as rough a man right there on that screen, that's his grandfather, as you could ever imagine. I mean, the guy was just a savage. So really an interesting process. The chance of a lifetime to get to do something like this, and I just can't believe I'm the one that ended up doing it. Yes, sir.
Well, I'm from the Northeast.
Okay.
That's sort of near the top of where Appalachia and Marlins are.
Yeah.
Most of the folks who live in Appalachia are Scotch-Irish, and they got there with James I chased the Catholics out of Northern Ireland and encouraged Presbyterian to go into that area, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm Scots-Irish trash myself. We thought about whether that was the reason, but, you know, the Scots-Irish did not just stop in eastern Kentucky. They went on to populate central Kentucky and western Kentucky, and they just went on. But we only had the feuds in eastern Kentucky. So you can't really blame it on the Klansmanship and that history of the Scots-Irish back over in their homeland. That was something that we thought about, and it may have played a part in it, you know, that type of person, but it was not the only reason. We've kind of concluded there were numerous. It was kind of the perfect storm that came together with the regulators, the violence that they perpetrated upon the people, all the counties, 120 little tiny counties. Just everything came together at the right time and lasted for so long there in the eastern part of Kentucky. Yeah, it's like Bad Tom Smith. He got to kill and plunder and rob and everything down in Perry County, but where he made his mistake was he came into Breathitt County and killed somebody, and then they hung him. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, I've been gone since 86, but I still, when I go back home, they make me feel like I've been gone 10 minutes. You know, it's just open arms as far as they're concerned for me.
Did you find any snakes yet?
Luckily, I did not, but I was ready for them. I've been under every rock up and down that creek and have never run across a copperhead, but I thought, you know, now that I'm a big old grown-up, I probably will. So he loaned me a hoe, and luckily I did not need it. You will probably have to ask somebody else. Dr. Hutton over here may be able to. He can't either. I'm going to have to defer to somebody a lot smarter than me on that one.
But it's not me.
Yes, ma'am. Well, there were numerous ways you could have made this film, and I could have made people, everybody in it was a pretty rough customer on both sides. I could have made everybody out to be a savage, and I don't know, maybe they were. There were a lot of people assassinated. I lost count at probably 150 people that were mentioned in newspaper articles of having died during that span of time. But my thought is that I'm going to just try to show people the way that the newspaper articles showed them, try to present the facts and not try to paint a picture of any particular person. So, you know, I didn't want to get shot myself. And so that was one reason that it has the tone and feel that it does. Well, it's debatable, I guess, and I'm glad Sam's not here, Sam Strong. But it's sort of debatable whether Captain Strong was really in the Army. I think he probably was, but it sounds to me like he spent most of the Civil War back in Breathitt County with a group of men that were pillaging and robbing and killing. And so when the war was over, the other men came back, and there was no central state law enforcement agency to help you get justice. So people basically just took it on their own. The Amos man was into it with the Strong. That was the first feud, the Strong Amos. They were into it because they had started out as regulators together. And our story is we've always heard they got in a fight over dividing up all the loot. And I guess Strong took a little more than Amos wanted him to. So Amos attacked Strong at his house. And then a little bit later, they waylaid Amos in our cabin and shot him out from the hillside. So you just went, literally, it was just back and forth, killing each other. But those regulators, I think, probably spent an awful lot of the Civil War right back there in the mountains doing just whatever they wanted because the other men were gone and things were... Same thing. I think that's, yeah, and I think that term home guard and regulator, I'm pretty sure is interchangeable. Well, it's been on KET since January. I've shown it twice at the Kentucky History Center in Frankfort, smaller history centers and museums across the state, and just twice here. So it's gotten quite a showing.